You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God.
Well, I'm going to welcome you and tell you how excited and how glad I am that you're here today to be a part of this very powerful day. We started off celebrating the life and the legacy of Martin Luther King and, you know, the tremendous value that he has provided to all of us in the ongoing awareness of who we are as people in a community. And we have before us today a wonderful opportunity to take some historic steps, perhaps, in how to deal with situations that maybe we're not as comfortable with as we might like. So our daily word for today is enrichment. How sweet could that be? Divine love blesses all that I think, say, and do. Can you imagine that? From what I know about daily word is that these words were written at least 6 months ago in order to meet the deadlines for publication. So is spirit in charge or what? In the Hebrew scriptures, Jacob dreamed of the angels, divine thought message, ascending and descending a ramp connected to heaven and the divine realm. And the earth, human awareness, in this dream, God promised Jacob that the families of the earth would be blessed through him and his descendants. Upon awakening, Jacob exclaimed, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." When he experienced a spiritual awakening, when I experienced a spiritual awakening, I discovered that the divine presence, the indwelling Christ, is within me even when I do not realize it. I open my mind and heart to the Christ presence, and my life is enriched in every possible way. Divine love blesses all that I think, all that I say, and all that I do. Then, in from Genesis 28:16, then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." I'm going to ask you to say part of that with me. We're going to drop off that last part, "and I did not know it," because you do know it. But I'd like you to affirm with me, "Surely the Lord is in this place." And that is the energy of this day. And thank you all.
Our very extra special guest this morning, for some of our newer folks who may not know, Gail Hamley. She is a beloved, integral part of the history of Unity of Tustin, being here for many, many years, and her energy and love and light have shone so deeply and brightly through this campus and through so many of our hearts. And she has, in recent years, been shining that light and holding us all in her heart from afar, having moved to Texas. And she is back here today, and we are so blessed and so grateful. Licensed Unity teacher, Gail Hamley.
I came back here now because I just celebrated on Friday my 70th birthday, and I was thinking about like how long it's been since I first stepped on this campus, and I was in my mid to late 40s. You guys are family to me, really, truly. And this is my spiritual home, so I'm so glad to be here today. And especially talking about Martin Luther King, because as I do, whenever I do a talk, I really do like to do the research on whatever lesson comes to me that I should be talking about. And tomorrow we're celebrating Martin Luther King Jr. for his leadership, for his vision, for his dream. And we've we've listened to the words of I Have a Dream speech over and over and over and over. For 51 years, we've been listening to that speech. And while I know that I can become greatly moved when I hear it, I started to wonder, you know, is it really grasping my awareness? Am I really getting the deepest understanding of what he is saying? Has it changed me? You know, I had the same questions when I was saying the Lord's Prayer one time. Am I really getting what Jesus meant when he said, use this as a sample of your prayer, say it this way? And you look at the words, but do you really, really understand everything that's behind it? And then the inner voice kept saying, look at the man, not the words. Look at the man. So I thought, okay. So let's look past the words and see who this man was. And so I'm going to give a brief history of his life. So he was born on January 15th, 1929, in Atlanta, Georgia, to Michael King Sr. and Alberta Williams King. His maternal grandfather was a rural minister in Atlanta who took a small, struggling Baptist church with 13 members and made it into a forceful congregation. His father, Michael King Sr., came from sharecroppers in a poor farming community. And Michael Sr. stepped in as pastor in his father-in-law's church in 1931 and became a very successful minister of his own. And somewhere around that time, he took on the name Martin Luther King in honor of one of the most renowned religious reformers. So I began to wonder, like, why would he do this? You know, I know that, blacks were named after their owners. And I started to really think about this a little bit. And I started to surmise that as he took on the cloak of minister and went into the teachings, that he really started to have the strong biblical pull that he needed to change his name, because names can fall into a pattern of power if you're naming yourself after someone else. So after all, when you think about it, God changed Abram's name to Abraham and Sarai's name to Sarah, and Jacob to Israel. And even Jesus changed the name of Simon to Peter. Men and women who had a new destiny in God. So it's understandable that Michael King Sr. would step into that as he became a minister. However, Michael King Jr. did not have that same experience at that time. And so he did not change his name at the same time that his father did. No, young Martin was very, very bright. He skipped the 9th and 11th grades, and he entered Morehouse College in Atlanta at the age of 15. As a young man, he was precocious, beer-drinking, white woman dating. Yeah, he was ready to go. And he did not embrace his father and grandfather's overtly emotional displays of religious worship. He chose not to follow his grandfather and father's footsteps into ministry. But in his junior year at Morehouse College, he took a Bible class, and this changed him. He began to envision a career in ministry and entered a theological seminary. His mentor was Morehouse College President Benjamin E. Mays, who was an outspoken advocate for racial equality. He encouraged King to see Christianity as a calling for social change. In my attempt to understand this change of heart, I began to understand that perhaps Benjamin E. Mays was a master teacher or a wisdom teacher. A wisdom teacher is recognized as an occupation, especially in the Far East. And it was brought over to the West. A wisdom teacher is one who teaches the ancient traditions of the transformation of human consciousness. They teach in a language of the people in story rather than law. And certainly the black slaves learned through storytelling. In this way, the student brings the story into their own lives for understanding and then begin living that which they understand. In 1954, he became a pastor of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. He earned his PhD in 1955. He was 25 years old. He earned the Nobel Prize in 1964 for his nonviolent campaign against racism, and he was a very strong advocate and student of Mahatma Gandhi's peaceful activism. As we know, he became a very powerful leader for change. So some of the things he did or helped to accomplish was that he was a really good, strong motivator. And so he was recognized as that by other activists. So some of the things that he has accomplished, in 1955, he led a Montgomery bus boycott to force desegregation of city buses. The boycott lasted 381 days. The outcome was the U.S. Supreme Court declared segregation of buses to be in violation of the Constitution. In 1957, he founded and was named president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC. They helped bring about the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In 1960, he became co-pastor with his father of Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, the church that his grandfather had served. On August 28, 1963, he gave his I've Got a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in front of a crowd of over 200,000 people. It is the largest civil rights rally in the history of the United States. In the spring of 1968, he went to Memphis, Tennessee to help sanitation workers win better wages and working conditions. On April 3rd, Martin Luther King gave his final and prophetic speech entitled, I've Been to the Mountaintop. The next day, he was assassinated by a sniper's bullet. This was the day before the march for the sanitation workers. He was 39 years old. Since 1986, his birthday has been a national holiday in the United States. These are the things he did as a result of his awakening to his spiritual path. In every speech, he spoke of agape love, nonviolence, or referred to biblical stories and applied them to what was happening now, especially Moses bringing his people out of Egypt, where they suffered and were held as slaves. This was a model for his own life, a template. He taught junior high students the importance of having a life template so they could live a productive life. He changed the pattern of history and he changed the consciousness of those whom he touched. There is actually a teacher's guide and a curriculum and a website to guide children on topics such as love, nonviolence, and creating a foundation for life. as I sat with all of this and recall the climate of the 60s when I was growing up, I recalled, all right, I really began to realize how we've come so far, but we have still so far to go. I recall Charles Dickens' beginning line in his book, A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. In many ways, we can say the same for today. Martin took us so far, and there's more. So much fear. A Course in Miracles says there is either fear or love. Where there is love, fear cannot exist. And I recalled how in the book Gulliver's Travels, author Jonathan Swift wrote about the little six-inch Lilliputians tying down Gulliver. Gulliver looked like them, except in size. He was so much bigger, and this made him look different. They tied him up, and they stood on him, and then Gulliver sat up. And then Gulliver stood up, and the Lilliputians and nail pegs flew in every direction, and the giant lumbers off with frivolous ropes and string trailing behind him while they watched in amazement. Aren't we like the little Lilliputians sometimes? The so-called giant, whatever it is, looks too big and scary to understand. So we try to pare it down, and we consider the fear that is within us. We name it the other, whatever it is. Recently on the radio, I heard a study of how innate this creation of the other is in humanity. For example, we all have saliva in our mouths. We don't even think about it. But if we do, we're glad that it's there. It moistens our mouth and it helps with our digestion. But if we spit that saliva into a glass of water, it's like, ugh, we're not going to drink that water. What was in us was purely natural, and the simple act of putting it out there makes it foreign, and we cringe. And the study, there was another part of the study talking about the toothbrush, sharing the toothbrush. See? And that for the most part, people will, if they have to share a toothbrush, they will do it with someone they love or a family member, but not with a stranger. Unless the stranger is a beautiful or handsome news anchor. Because beauty equates to health in our minds. I heard once the greatest disservice ever done in mankind is the separation of the sacred from the secular, and I agree. We create the other by our own distrust and fear of mere differences. The sacred in all is all that is, the numinous. It apparently is in our human DNA, and it takes awareness to change. It takes an evolution of our thinking process. I wanted to highlight Martin Luther King Jr., the man, because the more I learned about him, the more I saw him as a true wisdom teacher. We need them. When the world has separated from God, we need to find our wisdom teachers and become like them. That's what a true disciple is. You take in their teaching and to the point of embodying what you understand it to mean to you in your own life. And you become that. That's why Jesus was called a wisdom teacher and his followers were disciples. They became like him through their own understanding. of what he was teaching and what he meant and what they saw. When we become one with something, there's no separation, no other. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Man must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love." He said, "Remain committed to nonviolence. Our aim must never be to defeat or humiliate the white man, but to win his friendship and understanding. We must come to see the end we seek as a society at peace with itself, a society that can live with its conscience, and that day will be a day not of the white man, not of the black man. That will be the day of man as man." John Lewis, a man who walked with him at the biggest nonviolent march in history, from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, said, "As we marched with Dr. King, it seemed like the heavenly host was walking with us. We sang, we prayed, we were God's children." Like Martin Luther King Jr., if we are people who want to be part of the evolution of man, and I believe we do simply by our presence here this morning, then we must have a clear understanding and focus of our own personal calling from God, our spiritual journey. Martin's dream was his calling, his calling's template. It doesn't matter about our age or our health or our ability or inability. We are all children of God, and the smallest acts of love ripple out into the unknown. Do not be afraid to live your dream. So as I come to the close of my talk this morning, I end with a quote from Clarissa Pinkola Estes in her poem called "Dreams, Still We Shall Rise." If one were to cease dreaming bold dreams, then bold actions on earth would also cease. Wild dreams are the primary fuel for the engine of doing. Wild dreams are the golden fuse for the life force of being. If it cannot be dreamt, it cannot be done. Rise up, no preempting. Rather, seed everywhere the most beautiful, the most wild dreams roared up by the soul. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 5, it says, "Let this mind in you, which was also in the Christ Jesus." Let your deep love loose. Thank you.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the Donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.